What are we discussing tonight?
Well, we're about to find out. Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. It is the terrific trio on this week. I am your host, Shane Lees. I've got Nick Davey.
I like that, the terrific trio. Yeah. Good evening.
I've got Richard Hero Hudson.
Good evening. How are you doing?
We're all brilliant.
I'm fantastic now that Hero is back on.
Yeah, and it's been
I bet you've missed me, haven't you?
Been a few weeks since we've both been on. It's a busy January.
Hero hasn't been on this year, so can we have a round of applause?
Brilliant.
That sounded more like just lonely masturbation. But okay, we'll get right into it. Let's talk about Swansea.
That's what he does anyway when I'm on.
Let's talk about Swansea. The first thing I want to say about what's happened with Swansea, they've hired a new head coach, which is manager. For some reason, they're saying head coach rather than manager. I think they're just trying to dodge a bullet of accidentally not admitting that they brought in a manager and kept him around for 2 weeks before saying, actually, we're really not confident in you. But the thing I want to say is this guy, every single person I've seen pronounce his name has got it wrong. Every single one. Okay, it's spelt Guidolin. It's not how you say it. It's Francesco Guidolina. So you can say that to all your friends, you know how this random guy is pronounced. That'll be relevant for all of 6 months before he's fired, inevitably. But there you go, Francesco Guidolina, what do we think of this new manager?
What's his pedigree?
He's had about 20 years experience in Italy. He's done very well with a few clubs and then not so well with a few other clubs. I think most recently he was at Udinese and he got him to their joint highest finish of all time, which was third in the Serie A. Then again, he's also the only ever time he went outside of Italy, he went to Monaco and failed within a season. So it's a bit up there. A lot of people are saying he has no Premier League experience, but he was a technical advisor to Watford because he's part of the Pozzo family who run a small group of clubs.
I think it's a bit Remigard.
I agree with that. I think it's a gamble, but I think they had to do something because I think, what was it, after they, I think it was that Man United game on the 2nd of January, I think the whole feeling around the football club is they were going to be fine under Curtis, but then I think that Sunderland game sort of shook it up a bit and everyone was like, oh no, okay, we're not fine, he needs help. I'm not a big fan of clubs who do this. I think if you're in a relegation scrap, you should get in someone who knows the Premier League inside out, someone like Sam Allardyce, Tony
Pulis. I remember when they got rid of, who was it that went?
Gary Monk.
Laudrup?
Monk. And Monk. You were keen for him to go, weren't you, Shane?
I wasn't.
I know, I didn't want him to go, but I said I could understand why they were firing him. I thought it was a bad decision, though.
I thought it was a terrible decision.
Yeah,
I think they'll come to regret that come the end of the season. I think they're in a 3-4 going down.
They had a big win on Monday night. I said before that Watford game that they're looking like the guaranteed ones to go down with Villa. But I think now they've had that win against Watford, it's given them a bit of a confidence. But
well, we can talk about other managers who maybe should have been given a chance of it, but one thing I want to ask is with Alan Curtis, he was given the interim manager's job, but he was told, you're going to be in charge until the rest of the season. I think it's less than 2 weeks later, they've reneged on that, and they brought in a new manager. They called him a head coach to try and avoid saying, yeah, we brought in a new manager. But what I want to know is, who do we think was behind that? Do we think Alan Curtis admitted, okay, I'm not going to be able to really do this, I don't think I've got what it takes? Or was this a board just completely panicking and going, shit, we made a mistake here? Which way do we think that went?
Probably a bit of both, I'd suspect. I think probably just the general feeling around the club. I think players might have agreed with that. Curtis himself probably agreed with it. And above all, probably the owners have probably rightfully gone, we can't afford to go down, given all the, especially all the money that's up for stake at the end of the season with the new pay television bills for next season. So I think it was probably just an all round correct decision. But
yeah, well, I think it's a bit that. I don't think it was like the sort of the Liverpool situation in that when Rodgers went it was because the new Klopp was available. I don't think anybody would have been rushing out to get whatever his name is.
We don't know.
Windercliffe.
Yeah, if they went and brought in Mourinho, then fair enough.
Okay, but, I mean, surely they had to have an inkling before they put Alan Curtis in charge that maybe this is not the right decision. Surely they must have had an idea.
I think after that Man United game when Fabianski almost scored, I think the whole feeling was that everyone said Swans, they presumed it would all be fine. They played good football. They were very unlucky not to win. They actually battered United at times in that game and ended up losing still. But I think the whole general feeling was they would be fine, but I think they just they don't want to.
I don't think any club should really base what's going to happen on how they play against United at the moment.
Well, no, I don't mean that. I mean, they had a few positive games before then as well. I just think the whole feeling was, because that was when they appointed him after, I think it was the day after, the 2 days after the United game or whatever, they announced Curtis until the end of the season, or it was that week. So I think the whole feeling was he would be fine. It was before the FA Cup game, I think they appointed him. But rightfully so. I mean, they got thumped by Sunderland, who were also scrapping for themselves. So I think they just had to make the decision, and yeah.
Okay, well, is it a bit of an indictment of the state of British managers? Because there are a number of British managers available. You've got Tim Sherwood, you've got Brendan Rodgers, who was heavily linked with the role, you've got David Moyes, who's currently out of a job. There are a few others who I can't recall. I think one of them I looked at was potentially James Beattie, who was on the Swansea coaching staff, has managed before.
Oh, yeah, he did well at Accrington,
yeah.
Didn't he?
So you kind of have to wonder, they went out and got someone who, for British press, for the British public, is completely unknown, who has I'd say, a dodgy record, especially having never had any success whatsoever outside of Italy. Is it a bit of an indictment on the state of British managers, or is there something else at play here?
I think that possibly the two out of those three managers would probably not want the job.
Well, I was going to say, I think Rodgers and Moyes said no anyway, before it was...
Yeah,
Rodgers had come out and said a few days before this had even happened, he would love to one day go back to Swansea, he would love that job again.
Maybe too soon. He'll probably do it at the end of the season, maybe.
I just think that both of them probably thought that's a damaged ship at the moment.
Yeah, that let someone do the hard work and keep them up. And
what about Tim Sherwood? Because, I mean, I've said before I want Tim Sherwood to get a job where he's in there at the start of a season. But you look at Swansea, the situation they're in isn't that they've got bad players or that they play bad football. It's just a dramatic loss in confidence. They've got the same good team they had before, essentially. So surely you want someone who comes in and brings in a whole bunch of confidence. That's what Tim Sherwood's very good at.
He kept Villa up last year and got them to the final. But I think this season, and to be fair, I think Villa are always going to be doomed no matter who they're in.
I just don't care where Sherwood goes. I think he's an idiot.
All right, but if you were a Swansea fan, would you rather have Tim Sherwood get...
Sherwood at Tottenham had a 59 win ratio, second to none. Villa kept them up. But then I think the whole Villa were always going to be in this mess regardless of them, because they forced them to sell Benteke and that snake, and they didn't really get any replacements in. So.
But the question is if you're a Swansea fan, would you rather have someone like Sherwood brought in, or would you rather have a completely unknown like Guido Lina? I'm never going to get bored of saying that name. But as a Swansea fan, and they're obviously not going to go out and get Mourinho or some great manager, but for that standard of a job, which is a good job,
I can probably answer that question for you.
Surely they'd rather have someone like that, someone who is known for being able to get teams out of a relegation scrap.
I can probably ask you from a Swansea fan, I reckon they'll say, come back in a month's time and ask me. Yeah, no, it's just true, though. Like, if this bloke turns out he wins quite, he's already off to a flyer. I don't know who actually took charge, if it was him or Alan Curtis, but if they win the games, and then they'll say, yeah, he's the perfect choice. If they, in a month's time, and they're still scrapping, they'll be like, why on earth didn't we not go for someone like Sherwood, who knows the league?
That's the thing, isn't it? You go with somebody like Sherwood, who's a morale booster, but tactically quite inept.
But the thing is, Swansea's problem is that they're lacking confidence. Surely you want someone who comes in to bring in morale. They've got the style of play already.
Or do you bring in somebody, though, that will tactically get them, defensively more secure?
I suppose it's a bit of an open one, but I'd say when you're in a relegation fight, you want someone to come in and give you a big boost. Because they have the players to be good enough, to be defensively good, to be good in attacking and possession. They have the players for that. They're just lacking any confidence. I don't think it's the case that they are tactically poor, and they have been tactically poor. I just think they, to put it in like a really wishy-washy way, I don't think they felt good about themselves.
See, Swansea for the last few years have been all right in the Premier League.
They've been more than all right. They've gone above and beyond expectations almost every season.
But on an individual basis, they don't really have that many great players. It's a
team effort, yeah.
It's a team.
It's like
I thought Michu, when he first started, he was excellent.
Yeah, that dropped off a while. He's a bit like Swansea are a bit like Costa Rica at the World Cup. There's no great players there, but they all know what they're doing. They know what they're about, and they put it all together, and it actually turns out pretty good.
I think Ashley Williams is a quality centre-back, and I think he's a real leader, as shown the other night against Watford. I thought it was outstanding. I think Vaughan was a quality keeper, then obviously he left.
Keeson Young, I think he's very good.
Yeah,
but I can understand your point in regards to the confidence thing, because if it is a team, if it's just the team effort rather than the individual players that are there, then if that the confidence is gone, then they're a team that's just championship level.
Who scored all their goals in the first season up front? Because they had Sinclair and Dyer both sides of a striker, but I've forgotten his name.
Wouldn't it have been Boney?
No, it was even before Amichu. It was the very first year. I think he scored quite a lot of goals. Oh, fuck, I'm blank.
Was it a Welshie?
It might have been.
I can't honestly remember.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's kind of annoying.
I do think you look at that team, that is a Premier League standard team. It's not, you know...
I don't think it is. I don't think there's that much quality in there.
Okay, but would you say there are at least three teams in the Premier League who are of a worse standard of quality?
There's similar ones. I'd say, like, your Norwich is about the same level. Watford, although Watford have got two very good forwards at the moment. West Brom, Bournemouth, I'd say both of them were equal or better.
Right, but no one at the start of the season was tipping them to go down. No one was looking at his squad, looking at the manager and going, these guys are relegation quality. So, again, I think...
I think it's because they've always just had that very good team bond. The sum is better than the individual parts.
I think what they've done in quite a way is something very similar to what we've done at Southampton, which is every year they've been forced to sell off their better players. They haven't quite done it to quite the same fanfare.
Oh, it's Danny Graham.
Yeah, they haven't done it to quite the same fanfare as we have done. You know, with Southampton, it's always in the press that we sell all of our players. Swansea have done the same thing. I think their recruitment's been slightly off, though. I think they've brought in players like Bafétimbi Gomez, and on his day, he's very, very good. But he's on his day once in like five games. So I would say maybe that's the problem with the team. But I think they're better than most, you know, bottom five teams you'd associate in the Premier League. So I do think it was a confidence.
No one ever had them down to be relegation.
Yeah, I think that is fair enough, because I do think it is just a confidence thing, which is why I think someone like Tim Sherwood would have been perfect. And I do think it is a bad indictment of British managers that they can't go and get these jobs, though, because these are the jobs you would associate them with being able to go and get. If British managers can't get these jobs, then what the hell are they going to get?
Chris, you could have actually been a very good appointment for them. I don't want to speak. No, it's true, though. To be fair, he doesn't lose many games. That's been a show in the season. That's what you want. So in staying up, you don't lose games.
All right, well, I think we've probably trod this ground pretty well. Let's talk about another British manager who has actually managed to go and get a job. He's a British manager now. He's also a player. Kevin Nolan is player manager of Leyton Orient. What do we think of that one?
Was he training? I think he was training with them.
Nick, you sound like you've gone turned into a robot.
Yeah. Okay, Richard, you want to contribute? We'll see.
Is he finished? Is he gone?
Well, you just speak and we'll see if that gets any better.
I think it's a good first appointment for him. Leyton Orient's a team that's often sort of making a lot of noise but not really doing much. They've got the boxing guy in charge?
The boxing guy?
Who's the...
Oh, I hear you. Barry Hearn.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. I didn't connect that one there. I do think it's a good appointment, but it'll be... Okay, so, but do we think this will be a good opportunity for someone like Kevin Nolan? Because, as I was saying, there are very few opportunities for British managers, and could this be one where we could hopefully see him get, you know, into a better job? Or is this one we think, a bit like James Beattie, who mentioned before, Accrington, went there, had a decent run, didn't end very well, and then was forced to go back into being a coach?
I don't know. You got like ones like Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, who's shown that he's, you know, started off at the lower rung and is working his way up there. You had ones like previously, he didn't make it at the top level, but Paul Ince came down to like Macclesfield. Macclesfield, he was absolutely fantastic.
Oh yeah, Macclesfield, he kept them up against the odds.
And you know, he just didn't make it. He's just a gobby, basically, wasn't he, at the higher level?
He's a knob.
But, but I think it's good to blood him into something, a club like that.
I think he'll be a good appointment. He knows the area. I think he was training with actually Leyton Orient over the since he got released by West Ham, and I think I think he'll do all right there. I think they. It's actually a very eye-catching appointment as well, isn't it?
Hearn's not there anymore, is he, Chair?
No, he's not. I was just thinking that. It's some foreign owners.
Bocchetti.
I was thinking, Kevin Nolan, he is exactly the kind of player you could imagine becoming a manager and being fairly good. Like, fairly bog-standard, decent-level player.
Yeah, quite a good statistic record. Yeah. That Bolt when he was mustard.
Yeah, you know, absolutely standard, solid player. And those are always the ones who go off and become good managers. I think it's actually very rare that the best players go off and become good, you know, the best managers.
He could probably still do a job as well. I mean, him in playing League Two, he was starting a few games for West Ham last season.
Yeah.
For me, he was a good talker on the pitch, and he was a good leader of men.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. He's got the exact kind of qualities you'd associate with going into coaching and management and thinking, yeah, but they're actually going to be kind of decent, you know, as opposed to people like Maradona, who just had too much, you know, snow.
He scored quite a lot of goals as well from a centre midfielder, so I reckon he has all the potential to be very good.
Yeah, there you go, Leighton Orient. We approve of your decision. Well done. Okay.
Depends who he gets, because they get him as their assistant as well.
Yeah. Okay, we'll move on to transfers. There's not been too much happening in his window. We're going to talk about that a bit later. But we're going to talk about a few specific things. And the one I obviously want to talk about first is Charlie Austin to Southampton. £4 million.
What a signing.
Right, yeah. Okay, let's talk about that. What do we think about that as a signing?
Amazing signing. Absolutely sensational. I mean, I still stand by. Had Villa just paid whatever QPR wanted at the start of the season, they wouldn't be in this bloody mess. I think the
question's got to be asked, though, on why other clubs didn't come in for him.
That's what I'm wondering, because I was looking at the league table and thinking there's at least 15 clubs who could use an out-and-out striker.
Palace he'd been perfect for.
Well, even, you know, Man United and Liverpool.
Could have done a job.
Both of them are short on a striker. I know Liverpool.
Well, Danny Ings was doing all right at Liverpool until he got injured.
Yeah, but Liverpool have got about 15 of them, but all of them have got glass ankles.
Yeah, I mean, if Fellaini can get a game for United, and I quite like Fellaini, then Charlie Austin would have been right in there.
Well, with the Charlie Austin, that's the worry about Charlie Austin, is he's very injury prone.
Well, people keep saying that, and I have looked up, and he does have knee injuries in his history, but he has played almost every single game in the last, like, two or three seasons now.
Hasn't a manager come out and said that he wouldn't touch Charlie Austin because of his injury?
Yeah, well, it's an odd one, I find, but at the same time, let's say he does go off and get injured for the rest of his Southampton career, £4 million. Most Premier League clubs can afford to spunk £4 million up the wall and not think about it twice. For me, this is an absolute no-risk signing. £4 million, if he doesn't work out, oh well, bad luck. If it does work out, that's 15 goals a season. That's exactly what we've been missing.
I'm annoyed. I'm a Brighton fan. I'm annoyed that if 4 million, I'm annoyed. I'd have happily have paid 10 million for him.
Yes,
it'd have been a tremendous amount of money, but he would have got goals. And in my opinion, there's no price tag on goals.
If we had made this signing and it said Charlie Austin signs for Southampton for 12 million, I'd still be happy. So 4 million, it's for me, it's no risk. And I do struggle to think, why weren't there other clubs in for him?
I don't get it.
I think the thing that part of it was, though, that although they got him that cheap, aren't they paying £100,000 a week on him?
There was talk of that, yeah.
I haven't actually seen anything like that, so I'm going to have to take your word on it.
I have heard that as well.
I have to say, though, I would be surprised, simply on the virtue that, as it stands, I'm not aware of any Southampton players earning higher than £50,000 a week. They still have a very much championship-style wage bill at Southampton.
I did hear that.
And they've been very reluctant for years. There's been so many complaints on the forums that Southampton have been very reluctant to break their own wage budgets. So I would be surprised by that one.
Wouldn't say £50,000 is a lot for a championship player. I mean, I can't imagine we pay him any more than £20,000.
Oh, no, I mean, I think it was in the last year or so we finally got players above £30,000, which was the average. So, you know, we've still got a very limited wage budget in that sense. So I'd be very surprised if it was that much. I think it's one of those situations where a bit like when people were reporting the potential Sadio Mane transfer, where they're budget, you know, bunging a whole bunch of things in together to come up with that figure. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's something like that.
It was David Gold that said it, so I wouldn't believe too much of it.
Yeah, maybe he asked out of West Ham, because, you know, they're a bunch of fucking wheeler dealers. They clearly don't know what they're doing. All right, let's talk about another transfer. Costel Pantilimon. Pantilimon. There we go. Costel Pantilimon. He's moved to Watford from Sunderland. I'm going to put this out there. I cannot understand why he was not getting a game for Sunderland. He was their best player last year, by a distance.
Is he going there to be the number one, though?
I think that's what the question is. I mean, I've seen someone at work who's a Watford fan. He was under the impression that Gomez, when fit, is probably the number one. But I think long-term, Pantinimon probably will be, as in, I mean, long-term as in probably next season, because Gomez does seem to be on his last legs. I mean, he seems to be look like he's
He's never been on his first legs.
Yeah, he's on the older side.
Been, I think he's been pretty good for Watford. I mean, for Tottenham.
Oh, he's been good this season.
For Watford, and even in the Championship last season, he was excellent. Whenever, I mean, at the Amex, when we got to know, he made some sensational saves. I mean, but I think he's quite old, I think, Gomez.
Yeah, for me, this is another transfer, a bit like Charlie Austin. I can't understand why there weren't other clubs in for it. If we turned around and signed Pantilimon, I'd be quite happy with that, because Foster's always getting injuries, and our other keepers are shit. Pantilimon, he's good at shot stopping.
I think it's a good, solid signing for Watford. I think, obviously, when you sign a goalkeeper, you don't really get buzzing, do you? Or,
unless it's, yeah.
You only really tend to get 8'2".
you know what I mean? No, you don't really tell. When your club signs strikers, you get buzzing. When you sign creative midfielders, you get buzzing. When you sign goalkeepers and sort of defenders, you don't really seem. You don't really. Obviously, you're happy, but you don't get buzzing. But no, it's, I think it's a good solid song.
Did either of you see that the blog that Philip Lahm wrote?
Which one is this? The Ballon d'Or one?
Yes.
Yes, I assumed you'd spoken about this last
sort of
week.
Thing to sort of what Nick's saying is that. The world just revolves around strikers.
Oh, yeah, no one really... It's like, you're not going to see a goalkeeper win the Ballon d'Or for any number of years. I mean, Neuer is probably the best. He's probably up there with the best ever. And he's not even getting a look in, so... But no, I do get what you're saying. I think it's a very good signing. I think he is a solid keeper. He's maybe had the misfortune of either being stuck at a Man City side when they didn't seem to care about defending, or being stuck at a Sunderland side that does not know the meaning of the word defending. So I think he's very unlucky to have been sort of shipped out like that. But it's a good signing. If we had made him, I'd be happy with it. And I think there's, again, sort of 15 clubs who could have made that signing, and it's a good addition to their squad. So,
but you look at the likes of Liverpool that have just given Mignolet a new five-year contract.
Yeah. Like I said, there's a lot of clubs who could use a goalkeeper like that. A good shot stopper, commanding in the air when it comes to set pieces. Sure, occasionally he makes the odd mistake, but every single keeper does.
I think that's stupid, Mignolet getting a five-year. I think that's one of the reasons why Liverpool aren't a big club. Well, not all because of him, but I think if they're to become a challenging side for the title, they need to get rid of him and get a better goalkeeper.
Tell you what, we'll move on from Pantelimon. We'll talk about this now. Then it's not actually just being kind of harsh, because I'm fairly certain he had the most clean sheets last season, and that was a pretty leaky Liverpool defence as it was. Is he really that bad, Mignolet?
It doesn't fill you with confidence.
No, but is it more a case, and I think Gary Neville spoke about this, was how once the media starts to get on your back and once it all starts to develop, you just end up with this label that you are a leaky goalkeeper, despite the fact you might actually be quite good. Some keepers just get that reputation and they cannot shake it. Is it not maybe more that case than he is just rubbish?
I don't know. It's just... He seems to make a lot more mistakes than a lot of keepers.
I tell you what, I don't think that's true. I think what he does is he's good for very long periods, and then he makes a collection of mistakes all at once, and he just, the label resurges in the most dramatic fashions possible. I think that's what his problem is. He makes too many mistakes at one time, but then he's very good for the rest of the time. I mean, last year, people were saying quite good things about Mignolet, because, as I said, he had the most clean sheets, he was doing well in a poor Liverpool defence. I think he gets a hard run. I really do. I think he is a good keeper. Maybe, yeah, not the top-level standard, but can Liverpool genuinely attract that kind of keeper at the moment?
Well, they should be able to with Klopp in there.
Yeah, but, OK, what keeper could they have gone out and signed who is better than Mignolet?
Pantomelium.
That one might be a bit open to debate whether or not he's better than Mignolet. OK, but no, genuinely, if they were going to say, Mignolet, right, we're not going to, you know, do your contract again, we're going to go out and sign someone in January or in the summer, who could they have gone and got who was better than him?
They could have pushed for Cech. They could have at least tried for him.
I don't think they could have. They tried to get Sanchez and Arsenal beat them to that fairly easily.
Valdez they could have been going for.
Valdez, again, he's injury prone. There's questions about his sort of mentality, especially post-Barcelona.
Seems like a bit of a knob, Valdez.
He does seem like a bit of a knob. But yeah, I genuinely do think he is about as good as they're going to get at the moment. Unless they go out and get Champions League football, in which case they can go and attract better ones. I honestly don't think he'd leave Stoke at the moment.
If Liverpool come calling for a Stoke player, then that player will move.
Butland,
I would say at the moment. Oh yeah, no, I'd say at the moment though he's getting enough games there and he's probably fairly settled.
Then you wouldn't want one of the best goalkeepers.
Yeah, it's not a million miles away, Stoke to Liverpool.
Yeah, especially not at the moment. I think actually Stoke might be higher in the table than Liverpool right now.
Oh yeah, and it's the same with like when was Southampton Liverpool. Southampton finished, you know, above Liverpool, didn't they?
Yeah, we're 1 point off them at the moment. We've been having a terrible season.
But Liverpool ring up Southampton for a footballer, and he's on the first plane up there.
I do think the difference is with someone like Butland is he does seem quite settled. He seems pretty happy there. I'd be surprised for that one. But no, I'll sum that up there. I do think Mignolet gets a very hard go of it. I think he just makes collections of mistakes, and there's a bit of a reputation around him that's not always sort of earned. It's a bit like David James. He had the nickname Calamity James, didn't he? And he was a good goalkeeper. He just made mistakes at big moments. Okay, we'll talk about someone else. Sam Byram. Or Biram, I'm not sure how you pronounce that one. I know how to pronounce the random Italian bloke, but not an English guy. He has moved to West Ham. He's a right-back come winger. What do we think of that one?
I thought he was nailed on to go to Everton, and I think Everton would have been a better club for him.
Who's this?
Sam Byram, or Biram.
Yeah, I think Everton would have been a better club for him. But I suppose Everton have already got a right back in Seamus Coleman, and he's not exactly going to be going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, if you were Sam Byram, I can't even. Is it Carl Jenkinson at the moment at West Ham?
Yeah, but he's only on loan, though, isn't he, Carl Jenkinson?
Yeah, I mean, if you were Sam Byram, you'd be looking at that and going, one team I could very easily get into that team, the other team, I'm maybe waiting for 2 years before I get my shot, before someone finally decides to buy
Byram
Coleman.
Byram can play on the wing as well.
I'd say it's a good signing. I would have preferred to have seen him at Everton. They have a much better record at developing young players, especially in the modern era. But it's a good signing for West Ham. It's one that's kind of gone under the radar, because he is very highly rated by Ram.
Well, I think he's quality. I think he's one of the best players in the Championship.
Okay, we'll talk...
Best young players, anyway.
We'll talk about... We've got two more I want to talk about. The first one is, and most people probably won't know who this is, Nordine Amrabat. Yep, there we go.
Bless you.
He is signed for Watford. I want to say he's Moroccan, I think he is. He's a winger. I think they signed him from Malaga. I'm doing this from memory here. He's a winger sort of striker. Apparently he is quite good. Is that a good signing for Watford, or do we not know who he is?
Never heard of him. He might be good, he might be crap.
All right. Well, I know a tiny, tiny bit about him. Apparently he's quite decent. So, you know, hopefully he's good. And Watford have had a good season. They're dropping off a little bit at the moment, but I'm hoping they can keep doing well. I'd like to see all the promoted sides stay up. On that note, I think this is probably alongside Austin, this is the biggest transfer of the window so far. Stephen Naismith. I think him signing for Norwich is a brilliant signing.
I think it's a great signing for Norwich.
I think if you're looking for a signing who can potentially be the difference between relegation and staying up, someone like Naismith is someone who's going to... He's going to bring those players off the pitch together. He's got that great influence. And on the pitch, he's not going to get masses of goals, but he will drive a team forward. He's got that determination that forces everyone around him to work as hard as he does. I think that's a brilliant signing.
No, I agree.
Richard?
He's just solid, and he's a player that I think will help them stay in their division.
He's a James Milner, isn't he? Every club needs one. Every club needs a James Milner, a Stephen Naismith, maybe a Stephen Davis too. You got that, and you've got the most boring midfield in the world. But Jesus, they'll probably keep you up every single season.
Yeah, it's come up. Yeah,
it's. I think that's a really, really good signing. I couldn't understand if anyone's saying that's a bad one. Sure, he's a bit on the older side. And 8 million's maybe a bit steep.
But I think he's a very good player.
Yeah, if he keeps them up, it's all worth it. Look at the TV deal coming in at the end of the season. If you're a Premier League club at the moment, you're thinking we spend 10 million on some player and we stay in this league, we could be sorted for years. So I think, yeah, that's a brilliant signing. So let's talk about maybe the more fun things now. Transfer rumours. So has anyone got anything they want to talk about here?
Oh, this is Alex Teixeira.
I think I want to say it's pronounced Teixeira. I want to say that. I think.
He's been a very good player at
Shakhtar Donetsk.
Yeah, Shakhtar. It's like the highest. His goal ratio from being the centre mid is just phenomenal. He's been linked to a Liverpool, and I think he scored more goals this season than Liverpool.
Then again, it is in the Ukrainian league, and I have to say I do know the Ukrainian league decently well, because it's one of the few leagues where if you gamble on it, you're pretty much guaranteed to get your money back, because it is just so bog standard. Favourites win every week.
Well, he comes from the same club that both Douglas Costa and Willian.
Oh yeah, no, they do
both, have a both traded out, and he was very much in the same he played very well with those two.
Yeah, he's got a good record of being at a club who does very well with Brazilian players. Mm. And he's, you know, I can understand him wanting to leave a war-torn country, but no one seems to be acknowledging that's a political thing. Everyone's forgotten about that one. But I think it would be a good signing in the sense he's a good player. I do have two concerns. One, it will be a shit ton of money. It will be 20 to 30 million. And two, Liverpool don't need him at all. Not even slightly.
They're collecting attacking midfielders, aren't they?
They're collecting Brazilian attacking midfielders. They have maybe at most three spots available. Where does this guy fit in?
I presume it would be a sort of...
Coutinho, Firmino and Teixeira.
Yeah, in a sort of a three, go where you want, do your Brazilian shit stuff.
But, I mean, has that ever, that barely works with one Brazilian player in the Premier League. Three of them. I don't know. I think that's a very expensive transfer for a team who doesn't need it at all. If you're a Liverpool fan, you're thinking we're about to spunk 25 million on someone. Couldn't we go out and get a good goal scorer for 25 million? Someone whose legs will not be made of glass, like Sturridge. And someone who will not only turn up for under 21 matches like Origi or a big lump of Benteke. 25 million, you can go out and get some good players from that. And someone they need.
Well, they could have got Charlie Austin.
Could have got Charlie Austin.
An absolute fraction of it.
Yeah, I do think it will be a good signing. It'll be good to see him in the Premier League. He's clearly a very good player. It just reminds me a bit of Chelsea a few years ago when they were going out and signing players just to make Tottenham not sign them. You know, they were going out and collecting all these midfielders, and everyone knew at the start half of these players will never even put on a Chelsea shirt. Because
bought Willian for no reason at the time.
And he turned out to be decent only a few years later.
Like, yeah. De Bruyne they bought for just shits and giggles at the time.
Yeah, no, it feels like exactly the same circumstance where they're buying these players. And this is clearly no plan. There's no, like, structure here where they're going, oh, we definitely need to fill in this gap. We've got this role we haven't got covered. There are so many players at Liverpool who do the exact same thing as this player. Unless one of them is planning on leaving, which is the only thing I can think of as being a genuinely good reason for them signing him. But well, I couldn't see Coutinho leaving.
What I'd sort of heard was that they were offering 25 million for him. Shakhtar will want him 39. But the player himself is pretty much just hoping that Chelsea come in for him.
Who's that?
Alex Teixeira.
Oh, still him, yeah, no. Is he related to João Teixeira?
I doubt it, I don't think so. It's a very, very common surname.
Just one I can't pronounce.
Yeah, I like I said, I think it's like Willian going to Chelsea. It's a good signing, but especially at the time, you're wondering why the hell they're making it. Especially because unlike Chelsea in that situation, Liverpool do have players they need. They arguably need a new goalkeeper. I personally don't think so, but a lot of people do. They probably need an entire new defence, more or less, because they cannot stop set pieces. They could arguably use another central midfielder, an actual central midfielder who gets back and defends, a bit like Henderson, not someone who is just looking forward. And they maybe need a new striker. Instead, they're signing what they have about 4 billion of, attacking midfielders. It's a lot of money to waste, I think, especially on something you already have.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to another one. Alexander Pato, do you remember him? Football manager, aficionados, you will be remembering that name with fondness.
He needs to retire.
Yeah, he's only like 26, but yeah, we all know who that is. He played for AC Milan for a few years. It didn't
Not
really
great though. Overrated.
Didn't work out at all in Europe, and then he moved back to Brazil, and he's killed it in Brazil again. And now he's being linked with Chelsea. A move for 8 million, so it wouldn't be again too much money. And you would say Chelsea need another striker. It can't all fall on Costa. And Remy, for some reason, I think everyone at the club must hate him because he seems to do the goods every time he plays, but no one ever wants to play him. But is this kind of one that you look at and go, oh, it's clearly just another case of Falcao, but actually they do genuinely need a striker about, and for the money, sure, worth it.
It's worth a punt. Apparently in Brazil he's not been too bad.
Yeah, he's been quite good in Brazil. I think it's Corinthians, I want to say.
We're saying the barometer of the Ukraine League. That's an even more of a gamble, isn't it? The Brazilian league.
Yes, it's a big gamble. South American players seem to either fly in Europe or be so bad they get sold to the Middle East.
AC Milan was a bit of a poison chalice for a few years because he had also the El Shawadi.
Mr. Shawadi Wadi? El Shirawe.
Yeah, who's now been linked with all manner of bottom-rung Premier League clubs.
Yeah, I can pronounce all the foreign players really well. It's the English ones I'm struggling at. How is that possible?
But like, you look at the likes of Coutinho at Liverpool. You know, he was at Inter Milan and was shocking there.
Yeah, he was not. It was to the point where we were linked with him. We almost signed him one summer, and everyone thought that was going to be a terrible one. We were looking at that and thinking, this is Gaston Ramirez all over again.
And he was being loaned out all around Europe and not doing particularly well. He went to like one of the Spanish clubs and wasn't great there either. So, you know, everyone thought he was one of these sort of football manager players that never became good. And then, he's done the business at Liverpool.
The perennial Freddie Adus.
Yeah, it might work out for him. Going to Chelsea as well, there's a few other Brazilian players both at Chelsea and in the Premier League, so it wouldn't be like he's away from home so much.
I can't help but have this horrible, horrible feeling that he's going to be a big success there. I just have that feeling, and I often actually get it right, just from my gut feelings. Is when I start to use logic, I get it wrong. I do just have this feeling he's going to go there, and he's going to unseat Costa within 2 years, and be really genuinely quite good. And I don't like that feeling. I'm quite enjoying Chelsea suffering.
I don't think that Costa will be there come the summer.
I don't think he will be.
I think he's universally hated by just about everyone now. I mean, he's the biggest bastard football has had in years. He's maybe rivaling Cantona in being a big bastard, but at least Cantona had a personality bigger than a potato. I mean, Jesus, this guy's a knob.
The thing with Cantona is, like, even though he was a grade A cock, that you couldn't but help admire some of the what he could do on the pitch.
Yeah, and some of the stuff he came out of. He was genuinely entertaining on and off the pitch, despite being a knob in the meantime.
But Costa's just a knob. Just a thug.
He is an absolute scumbag. So I kind of hope, you know, in a way that Pato is a success there and gets rid of this guy once and for all, because I cannot stand having a player that dirty in the Premier League.
Suarez. Yeah. Everybody hated Suarez that wasn't a Liverpool fan.
Yeah,
but he's still a character of, and you know, he can do magic on the pitch.
Yeah, he was a bit more like Cantona. He may have been a big bastard off the pitch too, but he was magic on the pitch. There was no question about that. Costa, it's a case of he either does kind of well by just punching people, or he just punches people. And there's no real in between anymore. And we've seen some of like the replays. And on the one hand, he's like absolutely digging into these other defenders, and the next, he's just getting blown over by a piece of paper. It's like Drogba, but worse. And I never thought I'd say that with diving. So yeah, I kind of hope Pato does well. But okay, let's talk about another one. This one you might be interested in, Richard. Nemanja Vidic is being linked with Aston Villa.
Yeah, I saw that. It's a last throw of the dice, that, isn't it?
Aston Villa to sign Vidic, maybe.
Yeah, I think that would be a sign. But to be fair to Vidic, I mean, if they offer him a 6-month contract for Vidic, it could be the case of, well, if I've got to lose, really, if I go, I don't have to sign. I'd have to sign long term. I can go out there, try and keep them up. If I keep them up, I could have a lot of offers in the Premier League for next season, because people have seen I'm still got a lot to offer.
Yeah, he could get one big last money move out of it.
Yeah, he could even be for someone like Liverpool, who could actually, in fairness, probably do it.
Be very surprised
about. Well, I obviously wouldn't do it for United. For Villa, I think that it could actually work out well for both parties, really, though.
I think it would be a bit of a case of a Joleon Lescott. Good defender, but when you're going to a club like Villa and you are actually genuinely a very good defender, you're probably not going to care all that much.
Well, I see, yeah.
Like, there's no question, like, if I'd take Joleon Lescott out of Southampton sometimes, because sometimes we're awful at the back. And he was a very good defender back in the day. Everyone forgets that. But at a club like Villa, I mean, what passion are you really going to have there? The fans hate you. The club hates you.
can you blame the fans for hating their players?
No, you can't. I mean, it's just a circle of hatred there. You can't really blame anyone for not giving a shit anymore.
Wayne Hennessy had a bit of sympathy for Palace, for Villa, though.
Did he?
Well, he gave them a goal, didn't he?
Alright, so yeah, Nemanja Vidic, I personally don't think that'd be a very good transfer, not for Villa, because I just don't think he'd have a good attitude there. I think he wouldn't care about much. Okay, last one on the rumours.
I've seen quite a few clubs are interested in Ayew of Swansea.
Yeah, that's a bit of a surprising one, because he only got there in the summer, didn't he?
I don't think they'll let him go, Swansea, at least to the end of the season.
Yeah, I've had him in my fantasy team for like the last 8 weeks after he scored in the first few games, and He's done absolutely bloody nothing, so hope he bloody leaves. Okay, last...
I've got a couple of transfers as well after yours.
All right, last one I want to talk about is George Sampaoli. It's not a player, but it's a manager being heavily linked with Chelsea, because I think he's left Chile now. That's what I think. I think that's very recent he's left Chile. He's being very heavily linked. And I can't help but look at that and think it's a very good manager, clearly. He did very well with Chile in the Copa America. He did quite well with them at the World Cup. But at the same time, no experience of the Premier League, all that sort of stuff. You're looking at that and thinking, is it a case of Manuel Pellegrini? I mean, Manuel Pellegrini worked out, but he kind of had it all going for him. You got Aguero, you got Kompany, you got all that lot. So you're only going to be able to do so badly, especially when every other Premier League team at the top is seemingly in decline. So I do have to wonder about that transfer and think maybe they should have tried to got someone a bit more experienced. Anyone else?
Can't argue.
Oh, we're in an agreeing mood. All right, let's talk about your ones.
A couple. Firstly, Mario Götze has said that basically he wants out at Bayern.
Mario Götze, man. Okay.
I would be very surprised if he's not turning up at Anfield next season.
He's a top quality player. The one thing that surprised me about that one is he's actually played a lot of games for Bayern. He's been involved in, I think, I saw this the other week, and it's the majority of games. I think he's been involved more than Alaba and players like that. So that surprises me, actually.
It surprises me, especially with the news that Guardiola's already sort of going. I would have thought that he'd sort of said, well, I'm not happy at the moment. There's going to be a new guy coming in at the summer. I might then become the bee's knees. I'll stick with it, see how it goes.
He's one of the best young players in the world. And I will say there's always been a bit of an uneasy feeling about him at Bayern. I think it might be something to do with him being an ex-Dortmund player or something like that. But even though he's played, it's not quite clicked for him.
No, I always think he looks like he's carrying a bit of timber.
What?
He just looks like he's got a fat face.
we said earlier in the season Raheem Sterling runs like a girl, so I suppose we can accuse Mario Götze of being a bit chubby.
He's got a chubby face, but he has got an absolute bang tidy girlfriend.
Who's that?
Mario Götze.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd be surprised if there weren't a lot of clubs in for him. The guy who scored the World Cup winning goal, one of the best young players in world football. Yeah.
I think most Premier League clubs will have a try, but I'd be surprised if he doesn't want to get back with Klopp.
Which would really annoy me, because he's good and I wouldn't want to see him at Liverpool.
And he'll be another attacking midfielder for them.
Liverpool will just play him as a striker. Everyone loves to put attacking midfielders up front or wingers up front these days. No one likes a genuine forward. You got any more?
The other one was, he's a name that's not really on the radar at the moment, but there's quite a few Premier League clubs sniffing around him. It's a Benfica player called Renato Sanchez.
Okay, I think I've heard of him. Maybe only on FIFA, but the name rings a bell. Is he a winger?
He's a player that pretty much can play anywhere across the midfield, and even as defensive midfielder.
The Portuguese I Milner.
United have been to see him three times in the last 2 weeks. But he's 18 years old, and he's got currently a £58.8 million release clause in his contract.
Well,
he's 18.
I'm going to probably say there, I don't know anything about that player, but whoever gets him is probably getting ripped off, because how many genuinely world-class players even today would go for £60 million in their prime?
Well, it's the next Anthony Martial at that price, isn't it?
Okay, good point. There we go. Well done. All right. Is there any others?
He's considered the biggest thing in Portugal since Ronaldo. He's that well thought of.
There's been a few of those, though. I know we're saying Bernardo Silva, the guy who's at Monaco, is the next biggest thing out of Portugal. So
he's a good player as well, actually.
Oh, yeah, he is, but everyone always gets... If you're a Portuguese and you're a young player and you're looking half-decent, you're the next Ronaldo. Yeah. You could be playing a wing-back and you're the next Ronaldo. Any good Argentinian who's a little bit small is the next Messi. We got any other rumours we want to talk about?
There's a few, like with the PSG and Monaco. Well, there's Lavezzi to Chelsea, isn't there?
Yeah, I haven't heard of that one personally.
Cavani's, as every single transfer window has been mentioned.
Players like that, though, you just know they're going to retire there. Because if they're linked every single window, they won't ever leave. I swear they're just being stubborn sometimes.
I think that's about it. Right. Real Madrid, obviously, nothing's happening with them.
going leaving, but I imagine that they will try to do something before the end of next week.
I think, did we talk about this at all last week, Real Madrid, with the transfer ban?
Nick's gone AWOL.
No, I'm still.
Okay, I'll assume then we didn't talk about it too much, but I will say this. There's been a bit of a misunderstanding with that in terms of thinking they've got to do all their business in January. They're going to appeal, and just on virtue of appealing, they will get next summer to do their business, and then after that, they will get a two-year transfer ban.
Yeah, we discussed this last week.
Yeah, okay, there we go. So yeah, I just wanted to clarify that one. So I wouldn't actually expect to see too much from Real Madrid this window. They'll be setting everything up for the summer, I'd say. But yeah, okay, we'll talk about something a little bit related to this. I said about it earlier. Why hasn't the transfer window really happened? Because we've got Charlie Austin moving and Stephen Naismith, and those are arguably the two biggest transfers of the window, and those aren't, you know, big names. Why hasn't anything really picked up in this January transfer window? Is it maybe because of the way the Premier League's happened this year, where it's all a bit up in the air?
Nothing really does tend to really big happen in January. I know there was that one a few years ago when Torres moved on to Chelsea, but nothing. I don't think many owners, managers like to do their business in January. I think where you are in the season, if you really have got a chance of winning the league, you can think about investing, but you do get ripped off a bit more in January as well.
Well, that's actually my point, because you look at the season, and there's teams in 10th and 11th who could still get top four, and there's teams who are 10th and 11th could still go down. It's that sort of open this year. I would have thought this year every club would be going, okay, let's make a move, let's try and see if we can get something done. Because we could get relegated, or we could get a really good finish. It's so open. I would have thought there'd been more clubs going for it. Is it possible it's worked out the other way?
I think it's gone from the other side, and that players are a bit hesitant to be joining these clubs, not knowing because the league's so unstable at the moment.
Okay. Anything else you want to contribute to this little thing? Yeah, we'll take that as a note. Okay, let's move on to another bit of news. Javier Mascherano has been arrested. Yeah, okay. He's had a history of dodgy transfers, but this one kind of takes the biscuit. He's been done for 1.8 million euros of tax fraud in Spain. He's had his image rights being used in international subsidiaries. Yeah, I know this is a bit high-end for a football podcast, but he's been arrested for tax evasion. And, now he's trying to avoid going to prison.
Well, it says, I'm a sporting professional. I don't have a great understanding of taxes and law.
Mascherano has played the I am a stupid footballer, please don't blame me card.
Yeah.
It's literally what he's done. He's literally gone, no, I'm too stupid. I'm clearly too stupid to know this. I'm only one of the most intelligent footballers clearly around, because, Jesus, if you can manage to be a 5'9" defender and actually get away with it, you've got to be pretty bright. But yeah, he's played that card. I will say this thing, he's not likely to go to prison. Not at all. In Spain, if you get less than 2 years...
You can just pay it.
Yeah, you can essentially pay it off unless it's a violent crime. So they're just going to say, if you don't want to go to prison, Mascherano, you're a rich bastard, give us a lot of money, plus the amount of money you owe us in overdue taxes. I have to wonder, though, players at Barcelona, players at Real Madrid, how dodgy are these clubs? Because every single season, someone's getting done for taxes. Every single season, there's always something dodgy going on.
What's been the result of the Messi one?
I think that's still ongoing. Yeah, I think that's been going on for quite a while.
Because his will blow Mascherano's out of the water for the amount of money it is.
Yeah, and Neymar's also going through one, but that's related to the transfer, because apparently the transfer was reported to be about 40 million, and it looks like it could be more like 80 million. And so they're saying, you kind of owe us about 20 million worth in taxes. And they're going, oh, no, we don't. We paid it to Neymar's dad, so it's fine. Yeah, turns out that's really not how it works. It's not like it was a non-deductible gift. So, yeah, it's...
But in regards to, Messi, you said before that if it's under 2 million, you can pay it off.
No, if it's under 2 years. If it's under 2 years, the crime you're charged with, and it's not a violent crime, you can usually have, what we have in this country, a suspended sentence, where you pay off a whole bunch of money, and so long as you don't do anything bad, you're fine. But Messi's one, let me put it this way, Mascherano's is only 1.7 million in euros. It sounds like a lot to us, but for the amount of money these footballers are getting in these sponsorships, I'd say that's actually a fairly insignificant amount. That, for Messi, though, you look at the kind of image rights he's going to be selling, compared to Mascherano, it's going to be a lot. So I would say there could be a very, very different response to that one. Like you said, compared to Messi's, this one's is going to be pretty massive. So, yeah.
Well, there's is 5 million.
I'd be surprised. I'd say that's probably an underestimation.
Yeah, I would.
Okay, and this is really surprising as well, because Spain has very lax tax laws. Like, if you're a footballer and you're earning this kind of money, just pay your taxes. You're going to be rich anyway. What difference does it make? Pay your bloody bills.
Well, it's the same, though, isn't it? In this country, isn't it? With the Jimmy Carr and take that.
Yeah, I think we are a bunch of peasants, though, as far as we're concerned, you know. Just pay your taxes. I don't even know how people get away with this shit. Yeah, okay, just pay your bloody taxes, Mascherano, and you won't have to worry about going to a Spanish prison. Okay, let's move on. One thing I want to talk about, it's probably going to be our last topic, is the hypocritical media. Now, of course, everyone always has a bit of a dig at the sports media, because it is just an absolute cesspit at the moment. But I'm talking more about things like Sky Sports News, I'm talking about like Monday Night Football. They've been saying things like, oh, if Liverpool lose this game, they're out of the top four. If United lose this game, they're out of the top four. Oh, all these sorts of things. But then at the same time, they're saying, Chelsea, yeah, they could still get top four. If they have a good run between now and the season, they could get top four. Southampton, not quite out of it. West Ham, nah, no chance. Everton, yeah, maybe. I mean, there's just no consistency with like looking at the table and going, these clubs can make top four, but these clubs... Why were people saying, if Man United didn't beat Liverpool, they wouldn't get top four? But then saying at the same time, Chelsea could still go and do it.
There's clearly different biases between different media ports. Like you have like the Daily Mirror that have for years been quite sort of pro-United. And then you've got quite a base on both Sky and through the BBC that are so old Liverpool. You know, if you look at Mark Lovison's odds every week and who he has the matches with, over the course of the season, Liverpool win the league every year if it's on his results.
Yeah, I don't think Phil Merson, whichever one he is, I don't think he's ever predicted United to win. And I don't think Phil McNulty has ever written a news article that wasn't about Man United. So, yeah, I think so many pundits are struggling to deal with this current Premier League season. Because it is so wild out there. So they're saying things like Chelsea can still go and get top four, then saying a club on 30-odd points, if they lose their next match, it won't happen. And then they're also saying things like, Leicester, oh, they still could drop out of it. We're, what, 22 games into the season now? If Leicester win 8 games, it's pretty much guaranteed. And who can't see them winning half their games remaining?
And that's with all the other clubs below them, just every single week going from win-loss, win-loss.
I think what has happened here is pundits have not got a grip to what this current season is. They're holding on to the old values of this is your top four teams, this is your middle of the table teams. But this season has just blown everything out of the water. Teams look like they could be going down who should not be going down. Newcastle, Swansea, they should not be going down. Newcastle shouldn't have been in it last season. And yet, it's looking like it. Chelsea are even down there. And you've got teams, you know, looking like they're going to get top four. Tottenham finally look like they could do it. Leicester, I would bet for them. I wouldn't bet against them. I'd normally say that, but I would seriously put a bet on them to go and do it this year. 8 more wins, and they're guaranteed to have like the minimum most other teams have when they get a top four finish. And this is in the year where it's going to probably not take a lot to get you a top four finish.
Well, they're still 7 points ahead of fifth place, which is now United. I think I said it a few weeks ago that they were 8 points ahead of fifth, which at the time was West Ham.
Yeah, I think it's so much madness this season. And you are really starting to see, you know, the different media groups. You're really starting to see their bias come out now. Because all of a sudden, it's just looking a bit ridiculous when they say what they're saying this season. When people are saying United can't get top four this season, I agree. There's a good chance they might not. But to say they can't go and get it, and they're, what, 3 points off? 2 points off?
They're 2 points behind Spurs, who are perennial bottlers anyway.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I'm looking at the moment just going, you can't really apply any rules this season. So for the pundits who are, you're just seeing their biases come out in open. And I think it is quite frustrating because there's so little good media in regards to sport in terms of you're getting, you know, straight up information. It's not being too biased. It's being fairly balanced and you're actually getting some good arguments along the way. That it becomes so frustrating when you start to see this being so obviously, you know, when you're seeing Sky so obviously favouring Liverpool, it's so frustrating. Or Phil McNulty at the BBC just dying to wait and write another article about Man United. I think it's genuinely frustrating, especially for a fan of a club who, you know, are sort of always in between doing one or the other, you know, going down or top four or something like that. It's genuinely frustrating when pundits can't get their heads out of their asses and actually see the Premier League for what it is this year.
It's the most open and exciting Premier League for a long time.
I'd say ever. In the history of the Premier League, anyway.
It is in one respect, but also in another respect, it's also been a poor Premier League.
Okay, go on.
There's a lot of clubs that have taken this ethos that, similar to United, of possession is king, without actually going for the end result at the end of it.
I think we're losing Nick slightly there.
Right. Oh, I'm still there.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, tell you what. We still have a bit of time. So would you like to talk about the rich list as the last topic?
Well, it's the main Spanish two at the top, as usual.
Yeah, it's the usual suspects.
Yeah, but I think of the Premier League, is it something like 15 out of the top 40 are from the Premier League?
I think it was 17 in the top 30, actually. Or it was, wow. It was something crazy. I know it was something like 17 in top 30 or top 40. It was along the lines of, in the top 10 you got all the usual suspects, but then it's just Premier League, all up in there. I think it was West Ham are richer than Napoli, who are currently top of Serie A. So that,
yeah, West Ham are very rich.
That tells you a lot. But the one thing that stood out for me was Man United, the people at Deloitte, one of the two, they predicted that Man United in 2 years could be financially the biggest club in the world.
Well, they said next year.
Yeah, and I personally think that's a crock of shit. Like, okay, yes, straight up, in terms of pulling in revenue, they could be. But Man United are not like clubs like Real Madrid or Barcelona, where they have this dominance. Man United, for them, their foreign investments, their foreign sponsorships, their foreign fans rests on getting trophies. It rests on being successful. If they can't guarantee that, that's slowly going to start to leak away.
I think you're wrong on that.
All right, go on.
United now are generating so much money just purely from advertising, and it's a lot of the deals. It's not based. You know, it's United are just a brand.
But would you not expect, let's say Man United go for the next 4 years, they don't win anything. Next 4 years, you know, maybe they get an FA Cup or something like that. But Premier Leagues, Champions Leagues, they don't really do a lot. Maybe they only get Champions League once or twice. Do you really think those sponsorships are going to really stick around for that long?
While they're still selling the shirts and just are still...
But the foreign fans, they go for successful clubs. It's why Man City have a massive following in Asia, despite the fact they've only existed for about 5 years. I think it's so tied in with success, and Man United do not have that air of dominance like, you know, the big clubs in Spain or the big clubs in Germany have. So I think it's a bit of a misnomer that people are sort of going that the good times will keep going on. It's a brand. Yes, it's a brand, but it's a brand that's completely tied in with how things go on the pitch. Things keep going as they are for United over the next few years. That stuff's going to start to whittle away a little bit.
It may do to a small extent, but like if you say name the biggest clubs in Italy.
Juventus.
Say Juventus, and you would still have AC Milan up there.
You would say in terms of the name of the club, but that's in the same way you'd still say Liverpool are a big club in England.
But Liverpool's still got a big draw based upon their name.
Not foreign. Liverpool have big support domestically, but that's the thing. Because they dropped off the radar so much, they lost that foreign support. I mean, it was obviously during a different kind of, you know, top-level era, but they just were never able to rebuild it because the big foreign clubs and, you know, and the big foreign fans and all the foreign investors follow success. I think it's so tied in. And it is different to the clubs like Barcelona and Real Madrid, where they can guarantee it at least every other year. Man United, they can't do that. So I think, and especially with the fact their operating costs just keep going up and up and up. I said this last year, and I did have a few people arguing against me. Man United is not a well-run club. I'm not saying that in terms of like the manager and all that lot, but in terms of the board of directors and all those people, if you have that kind of revenue, but you're only having a tiny bit of profit or you're in the loss, you're pissing it all away. And, you know, a lot of that has happened with transfers and things like that. So I think it's a bit of a case where Man United's position is a lot more tenuous than it looks like in this thing.
I don't think so. I think United, unless they really plummet down the league, are pretty secure in the money that they're bringing in.
Oh no, it's not like they're going to go and do a Liverpool or a Leeds or anything like that. I'm definitely not saying anything like that. But I think it's just there's maybe a bit of instability. If they do start to lose some of that foreign investment because it doesn't work out on the pitch, then I think the board, especially with the way they are, how much longer are they going to want to stick around? Properly stick around, I mean. For them, this is a money exercise. And, you know, I said this again last season. If they sold out Old Trafford every single game of the season, it doesn't cover a third of their wage bill. This is the operating costs we're talking about. So it's super massive. If they can talk about bringing in 500 million plus of revenue each year, as much as they want, if you're spending 500 million pounds on your operating costs. Any other business, we'd say that's a bad business. We'd say you've got a good turnover.
I think if the Glazers decided to pack up and leave, then...
Well, I wouldn't be so much concerned about packing up and leaving, but I would be concerned about them committing less to Man United. Like I said, I think it's a more tenuous position than Man United are maybe acknowledging, and it is a lot more dependent on the pitch success and having that good Man United style of football than they are willing to admit. I think they're so dependent on having a very positive external financial situation, so dependent on foreign investment and sponsorships and all that lot, that they're sort of, they've got a bit, you know, tunnel vision on that front. They aren't seeing maybe where it matters.
I don't know. I think that the fact that the Premier League is such the spotlight on it over the other leagues at the moment with the financial deal, and that of the Premier League, however well City and Chelsea and Arsenal are doing, then United is still always going to be the name.
Okay, the truth is probably somewhere in between what we're both saying. But I tell you what, we have gone on for a bit now, so I'm going to cut this off short. Thank you for listening to us this week. We hope you've enjoyed, and we hope you can check us out on Facebook at V2 Football and on Twitter at V2 Football. Thank you for joining us this week. It's good night from me.
Good night from me.
And me.
Good night, and thank you for joining.